All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you guys had an awesome weekend. And the new week is upon us today, September 15th, 2025. It's Fed week. We get our interest rate decision later on this week. That's the big event everybody is looking forward to. But this morning, we've got an awful lot of headlines involving trade and the trade war and things going on overseas. Starting with the big one this morning that, you know, you go to Bloomberg, you go to CNBC, everybody's talking about this. China says that NVIDIA violated antitrust laws with its 2020 acquisition of Mellanox. Basically, NVIDIA has a monopoly, and therefore, we're going to do something. They're not saying what. They didn't say what the penalty was going to be or what remedies will be. They just said, oh, NVIDIA, you are a monopoly, and therefore, blank. Well, it looks like this, if I had to guess, this is just another salvo in the trade war. There are some tense negotiations going on between the United States and China. There have been for a while. I saw somebody posted on X this morning. It was pretty good. I can't remember who it was, or I'd give them credit for it. But they basically said, look, trade between the two largest economy in the world is happening on a 90-day ceasefire to 90-day ceasefire basis. Not really a good setup here, especially considering assets at all-time highs across the board. So, you know, you got China is going after NVIDIA because of this Mellanox thing. There's also a lot of headlines about a potential TikTok ban, and China's trying to get the TikTok issue thrown in with all the other trade disputes, and the U.S. is saying, no, TikTok is a whole separate issue. We're not going to include that as part of the trade. I really don't know where this is going to end up, guys. All I do know is NVIDIA tells us, supposedly, they do very little business in China. So this really shouldn't affect NVIDIA all that much unless you look closely at that Singapore revenue that NVIDIA has very mysteriously been reporting as skyrocketing ever since those export controls went into place in China. Kind of interesting. We've talked quite a bit about, we all know they're selling the chips to China that they shouldn't be, right? We all saw that Gamers Nexus documentary, even though Bloomberg, you know, circled the wagons around NVIDIA because they're nothing but sell side research, and they tried to protect the big stock bubble by filing a copyright strike on Gamers Nexus. We saw the same thing with MarketWatch, and all the other outlets did the same thing, ignore any of the research into CoreWeave. So, yeah, that's going on this morning. Now, we also got another Mag 7 name is in the news here. Elon Musk bought $1 billion worth of Tesla stock on September 12th. That was last Friday. Look, Tesla stock was ripping on Friday. I guess we know why. And now it's ripping again. So take that, Larry Ellison, who was the richest man in the world for about a day or 3 days, maybe over the weekend. I don't know if this move in Tesla stock this morning is enough for Elon to be pole vaulted back into first place or not. But Tesla shares are rallying on that news. Remember, Elon recently got a pay package worth up to $1 trillion if certain stock thresholds are met. And it looks like Elon is backing that with the conviction of his own money piling into Tesla shares this morning. We had some interesting Friday news dump a couple of days ago. Fitch has downgraded France's credit rating to single A plus. That's down from double A negative. Look, guys, I can't remember who posted it this morning, but somebody was writing, France is not Greece. They're not just the European Union or the International Monetary Fund is not just going to arbitrarily bail out France. The French GDP is 11 times that of Greece. France has a spending problem, and they need to get that under control. And if you've been following French politics recently, you know there is not even a cautiously optimistic roadmap to hopefully have a plan someday in place in France to do anything to address their spending problems. Oh, hey, kind of like us here in the United States, by the way, government shutdown pending once again in the weeks ahead. Nobody's doing anything to cut spending. The whole world is gearing up for a World War III that none of us can afford, and Fitch is saying we're going to downgrade France because of that. Case in point, we've got a new drone factory in the United Kingdom. It's a 250,000 square feet worth of production capacity for things that go boom, even as the Russians are launching drones into Poland. That's fun. We've got Ørsted, the big maker of wind turbines. They're in the news this morning. They are selling shares. They're raising capital because the company is at risk of going belly up after several high-profile projects here in the United States. either failed or President Trump pulled the government funding for them. Now they're trying to raise $9.4 billion by selling shares at a 67% discount to Friday's close. How'd you like to be a shareholder in that company right now? Yikes. Also on the renewable energy front, the Chinese just had their first auction for solar power using a new pricing system in place. And the prices that came in that auction are so low, they're saying it's going to discourage future projects in China. Now, the Chinese have been trying to subsidize their domestic solar industry, especially since the United States and the trade war, and we stopped buying so many solar panels from them when Trump took office. And, well, the problem is when you subsidize the hell out of an industry and they overbuild solar plants, the grid doesn't want or need that power. China has a huge overcapacity problem, and it's showing in this solar auction this morning. We've got U.S. small businesses. This is a really interesting story. Shout out to my moderator, Mish, who found this one. U.S. small businesses are turning to fintech startups to finance tariffs. And these fintech startups, these names and companies I've never heard of before, they're charging interest rates that are like worse than payday lenders. And this is what small businesses are having to pay. They're having to borrow, paying up to 20% interest to borrow money to pay the tariffs. And then what happens if they can't sell their inventory? Or what happens if they raise their prices for those tariffs and consumers reject them because tariffs are too high and consumers are broke? Well, I don't know what happens. But when you see people borrowing money at 20% APY, yikes. Yikes is all I can say. Meanwhile, you've got farmers are getting clobbered by a labor shortage. Now, how does that happen? How do we have a labor shortage in agriculture at the same time we're hearing all about how weak the jobs market is and we're downwardly revising all the jobs? Somebody help me with that one. Oh, that's right. We pay millions of people to do nothing. Then we import millions of people to do the jobs the people we pay to do nothing won't do. And then the farmers, of course, well, now they don't have that because we started deporting the millions of people that we imported to do the jobs the Americans won't do. And now the farmers are like, nobody will do it. Oh, and the Chinese aren't buying our agricultural products because trade war. Farmers are caught in the middle here. They're getting clobbered from both ends, both with the immigration crackdown and with the tariffs. At the end of the day, how do you fix that? I don't know. It's going to hurt no matter what. How do you fix that? You got to pay more for farm labor to get Americans to do it. You got to stop paying Americans to do nothing. And yes, we're probably going to have higher food prices, and higher food prices disproportionately hurts the poor. There's no easy way out of this. Meanwhile, we got the Empire Manufacturing Index this morning. Came in a little bit lower than expected, but it was those input prices paid. That you got to keep an eye on. See also tariffs. See also labor shortage. I think the same thing is showing up in that Empire Manufacturing Index. And along the lines of problems in the labor market, Sherwin-Williams announced late last week that they will be suspending their 401k match. That's something Sherwin-Williams, the paint manufacturer, has done twice in their history. They did it during COVID and they did it during the GFC. Now they're doing it again. But we're not in a financial crisis, right? We're not having an economic collapse. This is the best economy ever. So why is a popular name doing a thing they only do during economic crises? It's that housing market, guys. It is frozen in place and people aren't buying paint. I guess the sales of the agreeable gray that all the house flippers are using just is not enough to keep the 401k match going over at Sherwin-Williams. Guys, there is a lot of news this morning to talk about. We're going to rip through these stories today. So why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. That is the wrong screen setting. There we go. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm so you can come back and have your coffee with the melon heads tomorrow. Right now, the S&P 500 is up by 20 points or 0.3% in the green. Stocks a little bit higher this morning. The Dow is also having a good day, 87 points to the upside, 0.19% in the green. And the NASDAQ is up 63 points, more than a quarter of a percent higher this morning in lieu of absolute catastrophe. Number go up. Meanwhile, the DXY is a little bit weaker this morning, 18 basis points lower, 97.37 for the Dixie. That's going to put some upward pressure on asset prices this morning. We've got yields are lower in the bond market almost across the board here. The 30-year yield is at 4.664. That's lower by a point and a half. The 10-year yield is at 4.043, also a point and a half lower. The 2-year is down 2.5 points to 3.533. And even the 1 month is lower, 4.14. That's down by almost 2 basis points. Again, we've got the near certainty of a Fed cut this week on Wednesday. So we're probably going to see that 1 month drop pretty quickly here down towards 4% over the next few days. And looking over at the commodities board, we got some red and some green this morning. Starting with spot gold, $3,649. That's higher by about $6 this morning, or about 0.19% to the upside. Silver is pretty much unchanged here. It's right now it's down about a penny, or 0.03%, pretty much unchanged, although silver has had a monster run these last couple of weeks, months, last year and a half, really. Sitting at $42.18. I like the shiny. Copper, meanwhile, is higher by 0.3%. Platinum is down 0.8%. Palladium is down by 3%. Big move in palladium again. And crude oil is at $63.21 for October WTI future. Those are higher by about 50 cents or 0.8% this morning. Meanwhile, we've got Bitcoin is still playing around with that 50-day moving average. We've been here for a couple of days here. Right now, we're at $114,800 as priced on Coinbase. We had a pretty good move on Friday. We broke above the 50-day moving average. I've been talking about that level for quite a while. I said I want to see a retest, and then I want to see a move higher. Well, right now, we are getting our retest. We'll see where we go from here. We're getting very late in the cycle, guys. These crypto, the altcoin or the shitcoin treasury companies, right? We had an SEO marketing company in Hong Kong, some like lousy penny stock in Hong Kong, announced that they were becoming a shitcoin treasury company late last week. And they rallied like 1,000% on this news because they were borrowing $100 million to buy shitcoins. All of a sudden, it's an $8 billion company. Okay, guys, we are so late in the crypto cycle. The fraud and the froth is getting to such a fever pitch. Something bad is going to happen in crypto very soon. I can't tell you exactly what or exactly when. I can tell you, using history as a guide, it will be some point in the next few weeks. All right. Now here's the main story this morning. China targets NVIDIA over 2020 deal, raising trade talk stakes. China ruled that NVIDIA violated anti-monopoly laws with a high-profile 2020 deal, ratcheting up the pressure on Washington during sensitive trade negotiations. The U.S. chipmaker was found in violation of antitrust regulations after the acquisition of networking gear maker Mellanox Technologies, the State Administration for Market Regulation said, after concluding a preliminary investigation. NVIDIA's shares fell about 2% in pre-market trading, while U.S. stock index futures paired gains. The market really didn't care about this. That's pretty interesting. The surprise announcement emerged with the U.S. and Chinese officials heading into a second day of wide-ranging negotiations in Madrid over tariffs, which could shape the relationship between the world's two largest economies. Over the weekend, China also said it was launching an anti-dumping investigation targeting a type of semiconductor made by U.S. companies, including Texas Instruments. Its shares fell by 2% in pre-market trading. So look, if you're China and you need ammunition in the trade war, you want to hurt the U.S., there's two things you can hit us with. It's semiconductors and it is agricultural products. And that's what China is using against the United States. Of course, with the U.S., it's everything else that we buy from the Chinese. Let's also throw rare earth metals while we're in there on the same category. So this is going on right now. Be careful, guys. We could see a blow up in the bond market this week if we have a big breakdown, if the Chinese delegation just throws a fit and gets up and walks out, or if Trump's people throw a fit and they get up and walk out and this deal falls apart. We could be back to the 500% tariffs on all Chinese goods at any moment. That remains a risk. But for now, NVIDIA doesn't seem to care. The stock is down 1.2% ahead of the open here, $175.72, within arm's reach of an all-time high. So NVIDIA is not really worried about those sales to China, which it supposedly doesn't have to begin with. And we also got some worrying data from China this morning. China's economic slowdown deepens in August, with retail sales and industrial output missing expectations. Now, guys, Chinese stocks have been ripping the last couple of days because people expect more stimulus from China because this data is getting so bad. It's like bad news is good news all over again. China's economic slowdown deepened in August with a raft of key indicators missing expectations as weak demand persisted and Beijing's campaign against industrial overcapacity curbed output. Industrial overcapacity in China, that is going to be a theme we see playing out, I think, for years and years in the future as their population shrinks and as the world deglobalizes. There's going to be a lot of factories in China with nothing to do. Retail sales last month rose 3.4% from a year earlier. Data from the National Bureau of Statistics showed Monday missing analyst estimates for 3.9% growth. Keep in mind, guys, these are Chinese Communist Party statistics, so take them with a grain of salt. Industrial output growth slowed to 5.2% in August compared to 5.7% in July, marking its weakest level since August of 2024. And it was in September of 2024 that China rolled out their big stimulus measures last year, sending their stock market ripping higher. And so this is the weakest data we've gotten since those stimmy measures were unleashed. Economists had expected the data to be unchanged. Fixed asset investment reported on a year-to-date basis expanded just 0.5%. That's a sharp slowdown from 1.6% in January. Do I need to go on here, guys? Industrial overcapacity is causing problems in the Chinese economy, and the market expects the Chinese to fire off the stimmies once again. It's been almost a year since they did it last time. Meanwhile, Elon Musk purchases about $1 billion worth of Tesla shares. Tesla's chief executive officer, Elon Musk, purchased about $1 billion worth of the carmaker's shares, according to a regulatory filing. The billionaire bought the stock indirectly through a trust on September 12th, the filing shows. The purchases coincided with Tesla chair Robin Denholm speaking with Bloomberg News about the merits of a pay package for Musk that could be worth upwards of $1 trillion if the company achieves a series of ambitious milestones linked to market value and performance. So Elon is piling into Tesla, and, well, Tesla shareholders are joining him. The stock was up 7.4% on Friday. That was largely driven by Elon's buying, and it's up another 7.4% today, largely driven by Elon's buying, $425.30 for Tesla. Now, year to date, okay, this pre-market buying should be enough to put Tesla in the green year to date. Remember, Tesla had a really bad start of the year. The fallout from Elon's hitching his wagon to Trump and the Doge and all the spending cuts that never happened. Well, it looks like Tesla has now recovered from that. Meanwhile, we got this one out of Europe on Friday. Fitch downgrades crisis-strained France. We got government downgrades for France this morning here. Credit agency Fitch downgraded France's sovereign credit score on Friday to the country's lowest level on record, stripping the Eurozone's second largest economy of its AA status as it grapples with political crisis and ballooning debt. The move, bringing Fitch's score to A+, keeps pressure on Prime Minister Sebastien Lecornu just days into the job as he scrambles to form a cabinet and draft a 2026 budget that could pass a deeply divided parliament. The rating, the lowest on record for a major credit rating agency, has a stable outlook for future moves, Fitch said, attributing its cut to a lack of a clear horizon for debt stabilization in subsequent years. The downgrade was already priced into markets, analysts said, but the timing of the move is awkward for France and underlines growing investor concerns over its ability to rein in its budget deficit, now the highest in the Eurozone. So, look, the French are trying to increase their spending on defense. They just got rid of their debt breaks. They're running a huge budget deficit, which, by the way, is about the same size as our budget deficit relative to GDP. And Fitch is saying, you better get that under control. Look, France's borrowing costs, look at what they've done this year. I mean, here's the start of the year down here. And, well, France's borrowing costs have done nothing but rise as France borrows more and more. And the bond market is saying we want a higher interest rate in exchange for that. And it's kind of interesting. The French borrowing costs are barely moving right now on this news. I guess that means the market was largely expecting this downgrade. But again, France's GDP, 11 times that of Greece. So it's no longer the pigs, you know, Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain. It looks like France is really the big driver of the euro debt crisis this time around. And along those same lines, you know, here's why France is in a debt crisis, because Europe is getting ready to go to war. Look no further than this story. A new drone factory to open in Swindon in 2026. The 254,000 square foot facility will be operated by the manufacturer Tekever. The Defense Secretary John Healey said at the site visit today, Let's see. It will create 1,000 jobs and bring core production of the AR-5 drone to the UK for the first time, while increasing capacity of existing AR-3 production. The UK has bought £270 million in Tekover drones to help Ukrainian forces destroy advanced Russian air defense systems since Vladimir Putin launched his invasion in February of 2022. It will be the manufacturer's fourth UK site and its largest so far. And guys, it is all about the drones these days. Some of these latest attacks from the Russians into Ukraine have been involved several hundred drones at a time. The Russians are kicking these things out like crazy right now. You know, a lot of attention has been drawn to the fact that the Russians lost so many tanks and armored vehicles, and all their old Cold War equipment was blown up during the war. But while all that old equipment has been fed into the meat grinder along with human beings, China has built one of the biggest drone manufacturing industries in the world, second only probably to China, and they're spitting these things out like crazy now, and Europe is playing catch up. And we can't keep shooting down, you know, $20,000 drones with $2 million missiles. You know, the math of that obviously just doesn't work out over time. Meanwhile, we got this one from Orsted this morning. They're selling shares at a 67% discount and a $9.4 billion raise. The world went a little too bonkers for renewable energy. I was saying it for years, guys. The energy transition, it was a fake feel-good story aimed at placating the Gretas of the world. There was never any substance behind it. And now they have to raise capital to try to survive. Orsted plans to sell new shares at a 67% discount below Friday's close as the offshore wind developer pushes ahead with a $9.4 billion rights offering to shore up its finances after a bet on the U.S. market went wrong. The success of the rights offering, the biggest for a European energy company in over a decade, is critical for Orsted to sustain itself amid fierce opposition from the Trump administration as the company works to complete two major wind farms in the United States. New shares will be issued at 66.6 kroner, compared with a closing price of 200.3 kroner on Friday. That's according to a prospectus published Monday morning. The subscription price is 67% below the last close and at a discount of 39% of the theoretical X rights price. That's a measure used to evaluate the company's value after the addition of the new shares. So Orsted shareholders are taking it on the chin this morning. Big discount here as they try to survive because they just built too much capacity for wind farms. And looks like China's kind of got the same problem this morning. China renewable auction signals challenges for solar developers. This one just hit this morning. Solar power prices in China's first provincial auction under its new renewable pricing mechanism were so low they could discourage new project investment there, analysts said. Last week's auction in Shandong province, seen as a bellwether for nationwide auctions, signals that renewable prices in the future will be lower than under the previous system, although not necessarily as low as in Shandong, where a glut of solar investment has driven down prices. Based on the results, I wouldn't be very optimistic in other provinces unless it's in coastal provinces with strong power growth, said Jefferies analyst Alan Lau. The auction was part of a reform announced in February aimed at introducing market-based pricing in the world's dominant producer of renewable energy. And if you really want market-based pricing, then you can't subsidize the construction of these solar power plants because you're interfering with market signals. And China is trying to keep its solar industry alive ever since the pullback in the West. We're not buying as many Chinese solar panels anymore. And so they're trying to spur that with domestic demand. And then go figure, power prices are falling and these power plants are not profitable under that regime. So again, China's overcapacity problem showing up there. Now we have something of a different problem here in the States. Small businesses turn to lending startups as tariff costs mount. Keep an eye on this story, guys. Demand for short-term loans is spiking among companies that import merchandise from China. We're going to scroll all through the anecdotes at the beginning of the article, and we're going to get to this summary here. Small importers typically tap credit lines to help finance imported merchandise with the goal of paying down the debt as they sell it. But tariffs must be paid within days of cargo arriving at U.S. ports, creating a big new bill before they've sold anything. Despite interest rates as high as 20% on an annualized basis, borrowing beats the alternative. late fees and potential asset seizures for failing to pay tariffs on time. One New Jersey-based plastic food packaging importer said it took a 60-day credit line from Slope to pay about $300,000 in duties due when 100 shipping containers of packaging material from China arrived in the U.S. The company hopes to make the money back when it sells the supplies to its customers, including bakeries and supermarkets on the East Coast that order more due to holiday celebrations. The importer, who asked not to be identified since he was sharing financial information about his company, said he will pass the tariff cost to his customers, but needs money in advance to pay the duties when the goods arrive. The importer said he will pay about $9,000 or 1.5% per month for the 60-day loan, $300,000. So there's a couple of things to worry about here. You know, first of all, this is added cost, not just the cost of tariffs, but the cost of financing the tariffs. And this business is saying he plans to pass the cost on to consumers. But what if consumers don't pay it? Because consumers are already broke. We've already talked about that. What if consumers reject these higher prices? Well, then he's stuck with this loan at 20% annual interest. What the heck is he going to do then? And this just goes to show you guys the problems of the tariffs. They're still working their way through the economy. We haven't seen any big jumps in inflation yet, but we very well could. And if those jumps in inflation are too severe, we could accidentally abruptly reverse that and spill into deflation if all this debt starts going bad and these companies start going out of business because people can't afford their products anymore. And keep an eye on the farmers, guys. A lot of trouble for the farmers here. This whole thing is screwed up. Farmers in deep red Pennsylvania struggle to find workers. This is in my home state here. And guys, we're seeing this. I've seen anecdotes of this from some of the people in my Patreon group and some of the emails I get. Farmers are really hurting here. The U.S. agricultural workforce fell by 155,000 people, about 7% between March and July, according to an analysis of the Bureau of Labor Statistics data. That tracks with Pew Research Center data that shows total immigrant labor fell by 750,000 from January through July. The labor shortage piles onto an ongoing economic crisis for farmers, exacerbated by dwindling export markets that could leave them with crop surpluses. So look, the obvious answer here is just pay them more, right? Oh, yeah, farmers, just pay your help more. We have this weak labor market. There's people who need work. You guys need workers. Just increase your pay. But oh, look at that last part there. It piles onto ongoing economic crisis for farmers, exacerbated by dwindling export markets. Farmers can't just afford to pay more because the Chinese aren't buying our agricultural products. So the farmers are getting hit from both sides here. People don't understand that if we don't get more labor, our cows don't get milked and our crops don't get picked, said Tim Wood, a dairy farmer and a member of the Pennsylvania Farm Bureau Board of Directors. Guys, we pay millions of people to do nothing, and we have too many people out of work, and we have farmers who can't afford or farmers who can't find enough labor. I mean, the solutions here, they're painful, but they're obvious. Stop paying people not to work. Let food prices rise so the farmers can afford to pay them more. Like, look, we didn't have illegal immigration for years. Americans used to do these jobs, all right? American farms didn't just spring up overnight when millions of people crossed the border illegally. Americans used to do these jobs and things worked. So we've interfered with market signals. That's what's creating these situations here. And by the way, you can see these rising input prices also in this story, United States Empire Manufacturing Index. This is the manufacturing index for the New York region. Right, now, the overall index came in at negative 8.7. All right, this is a pretty bad reading. This index is keyed to 50. So anything below 50 is contraction. And this is negative 8.7. All right, so this is pretty bad. Let me just verify that key. Okay, no, I'm sorry. It's keyed to zero, not keyed to 50. I apologize for that. All right, so it is in contraction at negative 8.7, but it's barely in contraction, and it's been bouncing around these levels. All right, not exactly a big spike. But what I wanted to zero in on here was on the price front. This was the big data point. Input prices remained elevated at 46.1 versus 54.1. Remember, this index is keyed to zero. So input prices are ripping higher here. It's getting more expensive to produce things in New York, while selling price increases remain moderate at 21.6 versus 22.9. So final prices are going up, but input prices are going up faster. Maybe that's labor, maybe that's tariffs, maybe it's both. But what we're seeing here, guys, is prices on the producer side of the economy are continuing to go up. Now, 2 months ago, we had a big spike in producer price index and the PPI inflation. It wasn't quite that bad. It got revised lower last week on that PPI reading. But here we can see it showing up again in the Empire State Manufacturing Index. And we can see problems showing up here. Sherwin-Williams suspends 401k matching amid weak sales. Guys, Sherwin-Williams, they make paint. I'll be honest with you. I was looking at Sherwin-Williams earnings. They didn't look that bad. I mean, Sherwin, they were flat year over year. Sherwin-Williams is making the same amount of money they made a year ago. Now, Sherwin-Williams had an excellent 401k match program. They matched 100% up to 6% of total income. So, you know, if you put 6% of your paycheck in your Sherwin-Williams 401k, the company would match 100% of that. That is a fantastic 401k match. The problem is they're not doing it anymore. This is now the third time the company has stopped doing that. Look, guys, this is the housing market, right? Maybe tariffs are showing up here. I'm sure they input a lot of their paint, a lot of their packaging and things like that. But whatever it is here, workers are paying the price. This is a big pay cut. Now, people aren't going to see any difference in their paycheck, but they're no longer saving for their retirement. Maybe this is a way the company figures we can cut pay without people getting too pissed. But I saw some anecdotes on X this morning from Sherwin-Williams employees, and, well, they're pissed. And rightly so. This is a pay cut. Probably going to see more like this in the future, guys. And I just want to say thank you very much to Austin Feinberg. Thank you, Austin, so much for the super chat, sir. I appreciate the generosity. He says, is there a 25 to 50 point drop in rates, or if there's a 25 to 50 point drop, there will be downward price action. For every one buyer that will be able to re-enter the market, there will be five sellers looking to sell. Reasons, unemployment, and credit tightening. All right, I think we're talking about homes here, right? When you say there will be new sellers coming in. Let me just say real quick before we get into homes, I think there is a risk that the rate cuts on Wednesday could be a sell the news event because they are fully priced in. Everybody expects it, and everybody expects the market to rip on it, which means everybody's already bought. So there's only selling to happen here. That being said, I agree with what you're saying here, Austin. The golden handcuffs. You've got a lot of people right now who aren't selling their house, you know, like a lot of boomers who maybe want to downgrade from the big McMansion to a smaller place because they have an empty nest now. The lower rates could bring the sellers back faster than the buyers. Abso-freaking-lutely, Austin. It is another risk here. I don't know if it's necessarily going to play out that way. We have seen a surge in mortgage applications every time interest rates in the 30-year mortgage drop. We do see a surge in applications, but it's mostly for refinances. It's mostly people cashing out their home equity, which fits with the latter half of what you're saying in your comment here, rising unemployment, credit tightening, people can't make ends meet, and so they're tapping their home equity. Absolutely, Austin, I can see it playing out just like that, sir. Thank you very much for the super chat and the support of the channel. T.A. Chapman, thank you, sir. He says, good morning, Jack. Do you think the Fed can shock everyone and go as far as 100? They can, but they won't. It feels like the only thing that could get the market's attention. You know, one thing I think that we need to get the market's attention, T.A. Chapman, and that the market is not paying attention to is quantitative tightening, right? Because the reverse repo is all but exhausted. We're down to about $20 billion in the reverse repo. And the reverse repo is the excess liquidity sloshing around in the market. There pretty much isn't any anymore. We're like within 1 day rounding error of zero in reverse repo. And the Fed is still doing quantitative tightening. I don't know what the official pace is. It's somewhere around $25 billion a month, which means the Fed has to stop QT, and they have to stop probably within the next month or two. But I haven't heard the market thinking like that. The market hasn't talked about the end of QT. And that is a hawkish risk for the Federal Reserve. If they were to abruptly halt QT this week, I don't know. I guess maybe the market might rally a little bit on that because technically when you end QT, you're adding positive liquidity. But it also could be a sign that maybe the Fed is a little more desperate than we thought they are. That's something to keep an eye on. It feels like the only thing that could get the market's attention. I really don't think 100 points is going to happen here. There's a very, very slight chance that we get 50 points. I don't think they'll do that either, because 50 points will be seen as acquiescing to Trump. And right now there's a lot of political pressure on the Federal Reserve to not do what Donald Trump wants, even though the Fed is supposedly independent, right? Isn't that how that works? Yeah. Okay. I think 25 is pretty much a sure thing at this point, T.A. Chapman. Let's just summarize it at that. I also want to say thank you to Steve Woitis. Says, if melon heads have experienced strong emotions due to recent events, the following works for me. Limit social media, go walking, hiking, outside work. Yes, switch off social media, except for my channel. Don't switch me off. Talk about shooting yourself in the foot. Switch off social media, go outside, touch grass, hug your family, hug your kids. Good advice, Steve. Good messaging. And on that note, guys, a wise man once said, when people show you who they are, believe them the first time. Over the last few days, the last week or so, a lot of people showed us who they really are. And it's not good. It really isn't good. Thank you, Steve. Good vibe, sir. Appreciate that. Eduardo Garcia. Thank you, Eduardo, for saying something sacred has been disturbed. # I am Charlie Kirk. You know, it's funny you should mention the I am Charlie Kirk thing, Eduardo. Remember J Sweet Charlie? Does everybody remember that? What Charlie Hebdo in France? Weren't they killed for saying something that people thought was offensive? And instead of everybody saying, oh, they deserved it because they were spreading hate. No, they all said J Sweet Charlie. I don't see J Sweet Charlie freaking anywhere. But I do see I am Charlie Kirk. Thank you very much, Eduardo Garcia. But see other things, guys. It's important to understand. And it's important to have a good comprehension and a cautionary tale of how normal political violence is becoming in the United States and the dangers of that. That being said, don't let it take over your life, guys. Go outside, touch grass. When the world gets bad, get local, get hyper-local, shrink your circle, focus on what you can control in your immediate circle. Thank you very much, Eduardo. And thank you, Armando Reyes, who says, what are your thoughts on the EU possibly having spent all of Russia's frozen assets? I think in the long run, we're already starting to see this play out. I do think this will play a role in accelerating the dollar's decline as the world reserve currency. All right. Because we showed the world, store your reserve assets in US dollars as long as you're willing to do what we want. If we don't like what you do, we'll take your US dollars and we'll give it to your enemies. And, you know, you might be saying, well, Russia deserved that. Russia shouldn't have invaded. Okay, that's fine. You know, the perfectly legitimate arguments to be had, and we don't need to have that whole thing out here. But that being said, it does show that there is a risk of holding your money in U.S. dollars, that the U.S. government could just seize it, or the West could just seize it. And the West could always lower the bar for that, right? Maybe right now it's invade your neighbors, we'll seize your assets, but maybe later it's use the wrong pronouns or not reject fossil fuels quite hard enough and we'll seize your assets. So, you know, it started that slippery slope. And ever since that happened, we have seen the world's central banks start piling into gold. These two things are absolutely related. And that's my thoughts on the EU spending Russia's frozen assets. I don't know if they have or not. I thought they were trying to send the money to Ukraine. They're going to take it one way or another. Yeah, that's all. That's my take on that one. Thank you, Armando. Thank you, Gordon Guano as well, who says, drone factory in Swindon. Sounds like Nigel has a new plan. XTC fans will get the reference. I don't even know what XTC is. Nigel has a plan. Is XTC, is that a crypto reference or is that a Brexit reference? I couldn't tell you. I don't know enough about Nigel. Are we talking about Nigel Farage here? Either way, I don't know. But you know what? They're cranking out things that go boom, guys. I mean, I don't know how the world is going to pay for World War III. They seem dead set on it happening. We're all broke already. So what are they going to do? They're going to print money. And it's no wonder gold is $3,600 and rising. There's just not enough gold in the world for what's coming, guys. Thank you, Gordon, for supporting the channel. Sorry I didn't get the reference, sir. Nashville Pasta Man says, nice to see a CEO buying his own shares. That is a great point, Pasta Man. Most of the big CEOs have been dumping shares at breakneck pace for the last 2 or 3 years. While the stock market has been ripping, the insiders have been cashing out. Case in point, my boys over at CoreWeave dumping shares on a freaking daily basis along with Magnetar Capital. If you bought that company, congratulations. You are exit liquidity for dirtbags. Thank you, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. Ryan Scanlon says, have you seen iPostal One yet? No, I haven't. I don't even know what that is. They let you rent just a commercial mailing address instead of the actual building space. The floor is price discovery. I think that's pretty much like a UPS store, right? And that's what they do. You can rent a mailbox for your business. I guess it's a little better than a UPS store. I don't know. I mean, that's one of the ways, you know, when I'm researching companies, that's one of the things I do when I want to find out if a company is like just totally full of shit or not. Oh, we raised $5 million and we're going to do all this big thing. And then you go to their business registry and you look up their address, and then you Google the address and you find out it's like a FedEx, Kinko's, or a UPS store. That's one way to tell if the company's full of shit or not. So that doesn't surprise me. There's a lot of businesses that already do that. I'm actually kind of surprised there's a business that specializes in just that. It doesn't strike me as a particularly high margin business. Just rent a commercial mailing address instead of the space. I guess if you've got a vacant building with an address, you might as well let people have their mail sent there if you're not using the building. I guess it's now we're thinking outside the box. Thank you, Ryan. That's an interesting story. Tom Dillon, thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. He says, stop paying people not to work. What a concept, right? That sounds like capitalism talk. We don't allow market-based solutions around here anymore. Sounds too much like freedom. Look, the social safety net, it's there for a reason. But the social safety net has become the floor, right? You're not supposed to rely on your safeties. When you start relying on your safeties, they're no longer your safety. Now they're your primary. It's one of the things like in nuclear, one of the cultural things, you know, if we were tempted to tolerate equipment failure because there was a backup, then you're like, no, then the backup is not doing its job, because the backup is there in case the equipment fails. The backup is not there to let the equipment fail, because now it's no longer your backup if you're banking on it. It's your primary. Same thing with the social safety net. If so many people are hopelessly dependent on all these things, it means we're using it way too much, and we need to fix the primary. And the primary is the labor market doesn't pay enough in a lot of these low-wage manual labor jobs. Abso-freaking-lutely. Thank you, Tom Dillon, for supporting the channel, sir. I appreciate that very much. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. I appreciate that. Hey, don't forget the like button and that subscribe button for the algorithm on your way out, so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with us again. Thank you, guys, so much for all the generosity in the Super Chats, as well as you magnanimous Melon Heads on Patreon and YouTube members. Thank you guys for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big. We'll be right back.